20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. Jules Verne, 1828 to 1905, was a remarkable visionary author and predicted many aspects of the modern world in his science fiction adventures. In this excerpt from one of his best-known novels, the mysterious Captain Nemo leads an expedition to the site of lost Atlantis. The narrator, M. Aronnax, and the captain have donned their underwater suits and are walking on the ocean floor in the Atlantic, 150 leagues from the nearest coast.
Midnight was near. The waters were profoundly dark, but Captain Nemo pointed out in the distance a reddish spot, a sort of large light shining brilliantly about 2 miles from the Nautilus. What this fire might be, what could feed it, why and how it lit up the liquid mass, I could not say. In any case, it did light our way. Vaguely it is true, but I soon accustomed myself to the peculiar darkness. But the rosy light which guided us increased and lit up the horizon. The presence of this fire underwater puzzled me in the highest degree. Was I going towards a natural phenomenon, as yet unknown to the savants of Earth? Or even, for this thought crossed my brain, had human hands aught to do with this conflagration? Our road grew lighter and lighter. The white glimmer came and rose from the summit of a mountain about 800 feet high. But what I saw was simply a reflection, developed by the clearness of the waters. The source of this inexplicable light was a fire on the opposite side of the mountain. 2 hours after quitting the Nautilus, we had crossed the line of trees, and 100 feet above our heads rose the top of the mountain, which cast a shadow on the brilliant irradiation of the opposite slope. Some petrified shrubs ran fantastically here and there. Fish got up under our feet like birds of the long grass. The massive rocks were rent with impenetrable fractures, deep grottos, and unfathomable holes, at the bottom of which formidable creatures might be heard moving. My blood curdled when I saw enormous antennae blocking my road, or some frightful claw closing with a noise in the shadow of some cavity. Millions of luminous spots shone brightly in the midst of the darkness. They were the eyes of giant crustacea, crouched in their holes, giant lobsters setting themselves up like halberdiers, and moving their claws with clicking sounds of pincers, titanic crabs, pointed like a gun on its carriage, and frightful-looking polyps, interweaving their tentacles like a living nest of serpents. We had now arrived on the first platform, where other surprises awaited me. Before us lay some picturesque ruins which betrayed human handiwork and not that of the Creator. There were vast heaps of stone amongst which might be traced the vague and shadowy forms of castles and temples, clothed with a world of blossoming zoophytes, over which, instead of ivy, seaweed and brown algae threw a thick vegetable mantle. But what was this portion of the globe which had been swallowed by cataclysm? Who had placed these rocks and stones like cromlechs of prehistoric times? Where was I? Whither had Captain Nemo's fancy hurried me? I would fain have asked him. Not being able to, I stopped him and seized his arm. But shaking his head and pointing to the highest point of the mountain, he seemed to say, "Come, come along, come higher." I followed, and in a few minutes I had climbed to the top, which for a circle of 10 yards commanded the whole mass of rock. I looked down the side we had just climbed. The mountain did not rise more than 700 or 800 feet above the level of the plain, but on the opposite side it commanded from twice that height the depths of this part of the Atlantic. My eyes ranged far over a large space lit by a violent fulguration. In fact, the mountain was a volcano. At 50 feet above the peak, in the midst of a rain of stone and scoria, a large crater was vomiting forth torrents of lava which fell in a cascade of fire into the bosom of the liquid mass. Thus situated, this volcano lit the lower plain like an immense torch, even to the extreme limits of the horizon. I said that the submarine crater threw up lava, but no flames. Flames require the oxygen of the air to feed upon and cannot be developed underwater. But streams of lava, having themselves the principles of their incandescence, can attain a white heat, fight vigorously against the liquid element, and turn it to vapor by contact. Rapid currents bearing all these gases in diffusion and torrents of lava slid to the bottom of the mountain like an eruption of Vesuvius on another Terra del Greco. There indeed, under my eyes, ruined, destroyed, lay a town, its roofs open to the sky, its temples fallen, its arches dislocated, its columns lying on the ground, from which one would still recognize the massive character of Tuscan architecture. Further on, some remains of a gigantic aqueduct, here the high base of an acropolis, with a floating outline of a Parthenon, there traces of a quay, as if an ancient port had formerly abutted on the borders of the ocean, and disappeared with its merchant vessels and its war galleys. Further on again, long lines of sunken walls and broad, deserted streets, a perfect Pompeii escaped beneath the waters. Such was the sight Captain Nemo brought before my eyes. Where was I? Where was I? I must know at any cost. I tried to speak, but Captain Nemo stopped me by a gesture, and picking up a piece of chalk stone, advanced to a rock of black basalt, and traced one word. Atlantis. What a light shot through my mind! Atlantis! The Atlantis of Plato! The continent denied by Origen and Humboldt, who placed its disappearance among the legendary tales. I had it there now before my eyes, bearing upon it the unexceptionable testimony of its catastrophe. The region thus engulfed was beyond Europe, Asia, and Libya, beyond the columns of Hercules, where those powerful people, the Atlantides, lived against whom the first wars of ancient Greece were waged. Thus led by the strangest destiny, I was treading underfoot the mountains of this continent, touching with my hands those ruins 1,000 generations old, and contemporary with the geological epochs. I was walking on the very spot where the contemporaries of the first humans had walked. While I was trying to fix in my mind every detail of this grand landscape, Captain Nemo remained motionless, as if petrified in mute ecstasy, leaning on a mossy stone. Was he dreaming of those generations long since disappeared? Was he asking them the secrets of human destiny? Was it here the strange man came to steep himself in historical recollections and live again this ancient life? He who wanted no modern one? What would I not have given to know his thoughts, to share them, to understand them? We remained for an hour at this place, contemplating the vast plains under the brightness of the lava, which was sometimes wonderfully intense. Rapid tremblings ran along the mountain, caused by internal bubblings. Deep noises, distinctly transmitted through the liquid medium, were echoed with majestic grandeur. At this moment the moon appeared through the mass of waters and threw her pale rays on the buried continent. It was but a gleam, but what an indescribable effect! The captain rose, cast one last look on the immense plain, and then bade me follow him. We descended the mountain rapidly, and in the mineral forest once past, I saw the lantern of the Nautilus, shining like a star. The captain walked straight to it, and we got on board as the first rays of light whitened the surface of the ocean.